Why do we ride atop these elegant craft? The better to hear the screams of our prey as we ride them down, to savour the fear etched on their faces, to taste the tantalising tang of their blood in the air as an appetizer before the feast. But most of all, we ride them so that the slaughter may begin as soon as possible. Objective Secured Podcast. My name's Mike, and this is episode 10, Into the Darkness. And this is going to take a quick detour from the format we've been trying to achieve over the last couple of podcasts, primarily because it's going to be shorter. It's only going to be a half hour or so, depending on how much I can talk. And it's also going to focus primarily on the Dark Elder and my experiences with them in 8th edition 40k thus far. So for those of you who don't know my gaming history, I've played a lot of Dark Elder over the years. I missed their initial release back in 3rd edition. I was taking a little break from the game at the time, but came back and picked up an army and played some games. And around the sort of the tail end of 4th edition and the start of 5th edition, I started working on a hybrid Dark Elder Eldar army using Guardian parts to build the bodies, because I didn't really much like the 3rd edition kits. And then using 3rd edition heads and weapons to kind of hybridize them and turn them into a more modern looking Dark Eldar warrior. And of course, very shortly thereafter, they released the new Dark Eldar range in 5th edition, and that army very quickly got scrapped in favor of a brand new one. And I played my Dark Eldar fairly heavily all through 5th edition, right up until the ETC in 2012, which actually occurred the weekend of the release of 6th edition. And we played the Dark Elder all through 5th. We played a little bit of them in 6th as well. And we dabbled in them periodically through 6th and 7th. Less and less, as obviously 7th edition became what it became. And it's always been an army that I've really enjoyed playing. So one of the things I really looked forward to for 8th edition was bringing that army back out, getting some games back in with it and seeing how it felt. And then obviously looking at what other Dark Elder I had at home that could be painted and put on the table. So after playing about a dozen games of 8th edition 40k now, I haven't used the same army twice. I've actually been going back through my backlog of armies and trying each one out in varying states and with varying units and things, just to kind of get a feel for the game. I've tried my Eldar, I've tried my Dark Elder, my Harlequins, I've tried my Skitarii and Knights, I've tried a few permeations of the Witch Cult for my Dark Elder. Yeah, we've kind of been chopping and changing between them, and I've been playing against a good variety of opponents as well. We've done a few open days with games. I've been playing against Danger Rod and his Guard. I've done a few games against Sly Dave and his Eldar, and it's started to help me build a format for list building in 8th edition and started to give me an idea of the concepts that you need to have in an army, but they're still early days yet. What I am going to talk about, though, is my existing Dark Elder army from 5th edition and its heyday, how it performs now, and then obviously look to what the new Dark Elder brings to that, and then what I'm going to do with that army and obviously the extensive range of models that I still have sat here that I can add to that army. So the 1500 point army that I've been playing most recently is a version of the old 1850 army from 5th edition. So it's primarily Venoms, Raiders and Ravagers. If anyone has checked out the 3++ is the New Black website, you'll see a battle report there with my Dark Eldar against Matt Shadow Lord's Imperial Guard. Now, the army at 1500 points for that particular game was 3 Ravagers with Dark Lances, a Razor Wing with Dark Lances, I think you can see a pattern already, a Raider with a Dark Lance, and 5 Carbolite Warriors with a Blaster, or one Blaster, I should say. 4 units of 5 Carbolite Warriors with one Blaster each in 4 Venoms with double Splinter Cannons. And then a couple of, or this particular game was an Archon and a Succubus as the two HQs for the battalion. I've refined that a little bit and played another game with a very similar army without the Razor Wing, and I replaced that. I replaced the Succubus with an Archon. I replaced the Razor Wing with a Beastmaster and 10 Chimera. And, you know, shuffled a little bit of war gear for the two Archons, so 100 Blast Pistol. Now, I suppose the most interesting part about that is it is a very heavily mechanized army at 1,500 points. It's got the three Ravager Hulls, which have seen a significant bump in durability, not just because they have that built-in 5-up invulnerable now that you don't have to pay for, or you, I suppose you effectively do in its base cost, but also because it now has a toughness value of 6. It has 10 wounds, it has a 4-up armor save as well, which means that in the past, Bolters still, I mean, a Bolter's still wounded on a 5, but now I've, instead of having 3 hull points, I've got 10 wounds and a 4-up armor save. So one of the biggest changes for 8th edition 40k has seen a huge increase in durability on the Dark Elder vehicles. The Raider, 10 wounds, 4 plus armor, it's only toughness 5. But most interestingly is the Venoms, who still sport the toughness 5, 4 plus armor save, only 6 wounds, but have a built-in minus 1 to hit in ranged combat. And that's a huge boost for it, which interestingly enough means that most of the time it's actually going to be at least as durable as the Raider. Although obviously you're lacking the transport space there, but you know, 5 models in a Venom compared to the 10 in a Raider. And you've obviously got a different weapon payload as well. Now, anyone listening to this is probably rolling their eyes going, oh God, it's a spam list. And yeah, look, you know what? That's the way Dark Elder rolled in late 5th edition and 6th edition was it was about spamming the vehicles, Raiders, Ravagers, and particularly Venoms, who had a huge degree of firepower for the points that you paid. So how does that army translate into 8th edition 40k? Well, it's been an interesting one because the biggest change for the Venoms in particular is, apart from its durability, of course, is the Splinter Cannon. Now, the Splinter Cannons have gone up in points, so your Venoms have basically increased by 50% in their points values. And that's nothing new because most vehicles in the game saw at least that sort of increase, if not more. What it has done, though, is change the weapon from Assault 6 to Rapid Fire 3. Which basically means that anything over 18 inches, the Venom's firepower is halved compared to prior editions. So you end up with 6 shots at 18 to 30, so 18 and a half to 36 inches. But as soon as you hit that 18-inch bubble, you're then back to 12 shots. Now, I've seen a lot of arguments against running the double splinter cannon on these vehicles and saving yourself some points and just running the twin splinter rifle and a single splinter cannon, which is the base weapon load. And I can see arguments for and against. The most interesting part for me is that at close range, at 12 inches or less, you're basically only down 2 shots in that format. You've got the two splinter rifles at rapid fire, 1 each, and then the single splinter cannon that's rapid fire, 3. So you end up with 4 shots from the two splinter rifles and 6 from the splinter cannon. So you're 10 shots compared to 12, which is a pretty good place to be for the saving in points. But at 13 to 18 inches, the double splinter cannon Venom is still hitting out 12 shots, whereas you're back down to 8 with the splinter rifles. At 18 to 24 inches, the numbers change a little bit again, in that the single splinter cannon and double splinter rifle end up at 5 shots compared to the 6 shots from the double splinter cannon. But as soon as you tip over 24 inches, you're down to 3 shots from the single splinter cannon because the splinter rifle's now out of range compared to the 6, all the way out to 36 inches. And I think the flexibility of being able to engage targets at that long range with still with 6 poison shots is worth the points increase. And I saw that most recently in a game against demons where I needed to reach out and kill some brimstone horrors that were on an objective. And if I'd run the splinter rifles, I just wouldn't have had the firepower between the two Venoms to kill the half dozen brimstones. Whereas with the two Venoms putting out 12 shots, I did. So I definitely think the splinter cannons on those vehicles are still definitely a viable choice. It's certainly what I'll be running in the short to medium term without any changes, unless I can find a really important place to save those few points to put into something else. Moving on to the Raider and the Ravagers, who can kind of be rolled into the same boat, because again, your primary choice here is the weapon payload. You've either got Dark Lancers or Disintegrators. The Dark Lancers, at first glance, you go, yep, they're the weapon of choice. They're cheaper than a Disintegrator, they're Strength 8, they're Neg 4, they do D6 damage. They're only single shot, but, you know, Lancers always have been. And you compare that to the Disintegrator, it's only Strength 5, it only does 2 damage, it's saving throw modifiers only Neg 3. You're kind of left going, oh, you know, the Dark Lancer's better, until you realise that the Disintegrators are 3 shots each. And this game is certainly about volume. Volume tends to be more important than anything else. Certainly, that's my experience so far. And whether that's bodies on the table or shots down range, I think either of those is vital, that more shots is almost always going to be better. So when you actually compare the two of them, the Disintegrator is actually probably a more viable weapon right up to sort of that toughness 9 bracket when compared to the Dark Lance, because it's going to do probably, you know, point for point, at least the same amount of damage. Because particularly on a Ravager, where you're putting out 9 shots compared to 3 with the Lances, 3 Lances, you're going to get a couple of hits. A couple of hits is going to translate to 1 or maybe 2 wounds if they've got an Involve save, and then you're going to do D6 damage, you're going to do, you know, 3 or 4 wounds. With the Disintegrator shots, you've got 9 shots, you're going to get 6 hits, and those 6 hits are then going to translate into probably 3 or 4 wounds, and you're doing 2 damage each time. So, you know, you're talking about realistically doing some fairly decent damage with Disintegrators at the equivalent range, and what's most important about it is it's consistent, because you know it's doing 2 damage every time. Whereas with the Dark Lances, you can be in a situation where you go, oh, look, you know, on a 4+, I can destroy that vehicle, and you roll a 1, you use a command point, oh, you get a 2. It's not enough. At least if you know going in that the target has 10 wounds and you got 3 Disintegrators pointed at it, you can do 18 wounds, and you can kind of plan for what you expect for dealing with that vehicle. And I think that's a really important attribute to minimize some of the randomness of the game at a competitive end, at a tournament. If you can minimize the randomness and get reliable expected results, then you're obviously going to be much more likely to achieve wins, because you can plan for them. The jury's still out. I've still got Dark Lances on all my vehicles at the moment, and my gut feeling is I need to try them with Disintegrators and see what the different effect is. Maybe play 2 games back to back against the same opponent, once with Dark Lances and once with Disintegrators, and see what happens. But my gut feeling at the moment is that Disintegrators might actually be a way to go in future games. Moving on to the Carbolite Warriors and the Archons. What's interesting here is the Power from Pain mechanic. Now, the Splinter Rifles haven't changed. The Blaster is still a one-shot, Strength 8, Neg 4, much like a Dark Lance, but it's only D3 damage, not D6. So they're a nice, reliable way of plinking a few wounds off of a vehicle that's severely damaged, or en masse, you can quite happily put a bunch of wounds onto a vehicle. Still relatively expensive and still better than a Shredder. I wish the Shredder had been converted to our flame weapon, I really do, but it wasn't to be. So we end up with a very similar build for Carbolite Warriors. There might be an argument for running more than 5. Personally, I think 5 is completely fine. They're not there to do anything other than be required troop choices, which allow you to access Venoms, and then obviously look at scoring objectives if need be, and putting some extra splinter shots down range. I'm quite happy for them to fire single shots at 18 inches along with a single blaster shot from a Venom and get the 12 shots out of the Venom, rather than closing and risking the Venom and the infantry, because as soon as they're put on the table, they die every time. 5+ save or not, you know, you get hit with 10 bolters, you're probably going to die. So yeah, I'm still a big fan of running them with just 5 guys, 4 splinter rifles, and the blaster. I think now that you're getting the Cyberite for free, if you've got some points left over, then handing out things like the Phantasm Grenade Launcher could be viable. I've actually had a little bit of success with that, particularly against Demons, whose leadership's now a lot lower. And I've seen some indication with the way morale works now that the mass Phantasm Launcher might actually be a viable way of running multiple Dark Elder units, because you can start forcing multiple leadership checks across the army. And if you can kill things like Commissars or any of those leadership buff characters in other armies, I could certainly see that being quite useful. Even combining it with a Death Jester's Death Is Not Enough from the Harlequin range could be really interesting, because you can then start layering effects of leadership. If you've got a Hemlock that can drop a -1 on a unit, drop a further -1 on it from Horrify, and then another -1 from a Phantasm Grenade Launcher, and then the Death Jester gets to pick the first casualty, I can see that comboing up quite well. You just have to question whether the points in doing that would be better spent just killing more models, but that's a discussion for another day. The Archon hasn't changed significantly. He's actually probably less killy now than he almost ever has been. You've got a couple of weapon choices. You've got a Husk Blade, which is user strength, and does D3 damage, or you've got the Agonizer, which always wins on fours, but only does one damage. Neither of them have especially awe-inspiring armor modifiers. He's five attacks. He's hitting on twos. You can hand him a blast pistol and phantasm grenade launcher and those sorts of things. The best part about him, of course, is he's very, very cheap, and he comes with a Shadowfield standard. The Shadowfield's now back to the old way, where it doesn't clarify that you get it till the end of the phase. You do literally have to roll them one at a time and lose it when you lose it, which is a bit of a shame. But he does have five wounds now, so normally you'll be able to take a few hits and keep on swinging. So I don't mind the Archon. I've tried a Succubus as well. The Succubus trades that 2+ Shadowfield for a 4+ invul, but then gets a better close combat weapon in the form of the Archite Glaive. What's most important to note about the Dark Elder infantry in general, and it applies to 95% of their infantry, you've only got a handful of things that don't get Power from Pain, is that Power from Pain is actually a really good mechanic now. This is kind of back to the days where you were collecting pain tokens and it did quite a few interesting effects the more you collected. Well, we're now back to a turn sequence activation where you just get buffs based on the turn number, but the buffs are actually now really viable. So turn one, your entire army picks up what is essentially a 6+ feel no pain. So it's against wounds after failed saves, and on a 6 you ignore it. Now that doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you've got a 5+ armor save followed by a 6+ feel no pain, you're essentially in a position where you can start negating wounds. And even on Archons and things who are 5 wounds and toughness 3, getting that 6 every now and again will keep them alive. And best of all, you can stack that with the Warlord trait. So your Archon can get a couple of 6+ saves, or when I say saves, 6+ rolls after their failed save to keep them on the table. And that's pretty cool. Turn 2 sees them get reroll charges, and this is a big one for the Dark Elder. The ability to reroll all charges is huge. It means that things like Hellions and Reavers who are on you turn 2 are almost guaranteeing themselves charges. It means that getting out of a vehicle at the start of turn 2, moving and assaulting, is a much more viable proposition, particularly for things like Raiders or the Forge or Tantalus, where they've got such big profiles, so that you can disembark, then move, and all of a sudden you've covered 10 inches, 11 inches with some units, and then get a 2d6 charge off with a reroll. That's pretty big. So that's a very significant buff for a lot of the assault units. Incubi, Mandrakes, Witches, Hellions, all very, very good units that benefit from that rule. The turn 3 sees you get +1 to hit in close combat, which is amazing. It essentially means the entire army, if they have Power from Pain, is hitting on 2s, because they're all at least weapon skill 3+. So when you stack that with reroll 1s from Witches, say on a Succubus, you've got hitting on 2s, rerolling 1s essentially. And I will point out, it is +1 to hit on the dice roll, but I can't find a way to get reroll everything for a Witch unit, so you don't get to reroll the 2s, but that doesn't matter, because you're still obviously rerolling 1s and the 2s will get modified. And I've seen some huge benefits from that that +1 to hit. So it does mean that majority, by the time you hit third turn, you're rerolling charges, you're getting +1 to hit, so you're generally going to be hitting on 2s, often with a reroll depending on the buff that you've got nearby. It means that Dark Elder, with volume of attacks, really do lay on the pain, particularly in turn 3 onwards. Turn 4 sees you immune to morale, which again is a huge, huge benefit, particularly for the larger squads, like where you might be running sort of 12 to 15 to maybe even 20 Hellions. It means that if they can get them through to turn 4, they're there for the rest of the game. You're going to have to kill every single one of them. And while they're not particularly tough kills, it's a lot of bodies that you have to chew through, and they're hitting on 2s, and they've got a reasonable close combat weapon with strength 4 and damage 2, so you can't afford not to kill them. So there's a lot of buffs from those, particularly those last turn 3 and turn 4 Power from Pain rules. Turn 5 is a bit of a, that's okay. It's a -1 leadership to all enemies within a certain distance. I think it's 6. And that's okay, particularly in late game where you might have small units that you can start enforcing those morale tests on, and maybe having an extra model or two die. But I don't think it's game breaking. I think that sort of turn 2, 3, and 4, when the battle's really pitching in, is where it's at. So as an army rule, I think Power from Pain is now one that you actually do probably want to keep. Certainly, it's no longer a straight, I don't care about, I'll field them as an Ahri and just get Soulburst. I think there is an argument to be made for keeping Power from Pain and running them as Dark Elder and not an Ahri. And I think that's great to be in that position where you actually have to choose rather than just simply going, oh, I'll just play Inari because they're better in every way. So I've certainly seen my Dark Elder survive attrition better. They still don't like guard, particularly guard en masse with vehicles, because as I discovered, Rubber Lance now has another layer of intricacy because they're wounding on threes against most vehicles these days, which is obviously better than the four pluses with the Lance rule against armor 12. But because vehicles no longer have just three hell points, they tend to have six or 10 or more, particularly guard vehicles. You're in this weird position where you can't rely on three Lance hits to get the job done. So you're kind of almost having to fire more anti-tank guns at them. And you're still in a position where you don't like heavily mechanized forces with a Dark Elder, Dark Lance army. That might be different with Disintegrators, but that's more playtesting that needs to be done. I think the Razorwing Jet Fighter, for the couple of games I played with it, is a much better plane. The 360-degree firing arcs on vehicles from any point in the vehicle requires a little bit of cinematic disbelief. And I was talking about this last night with a friend, in that if you can imagine the vehicle, and it's not just a flyer, it's as it moves between its points, it's constantly moving and firing and strafing, and all that they've done is moved it so that that resolution of that shooting is done in a single phase, rather than trying to move a vehicle, stop it halfway, pick a target, fire it, move it a little bit more, stop it, pick a target, move it a little bit more, and maintaining and controlling that. I think it'd just dilute the game down and make it really clunky. It'd be more, I suppose, visually accurate, but I also think it'd be detrimental in terms of actually playing the game. So the fact that the Razorwing's missiles are now unlimited, you don't have to keep track of them, you can choose which ones you fire each turn. You've got a good range of missiles on the Razorwing. Whether you go the Splinter Cannon or the Splinter Rifles, you're essentially going, again, you're going back to that Venom scenario where at long range the Splinter Cannon picks it up. At mid-range, the difference is only one shot, and at close range, the difference is only two shots. So, you know, I can probably see an argument for the Razorwing not taking it, because you're wanting to fire the missiles and the lances or the disintegrators most of the time anyway. So, yeah, I think that that covers the majority of the units I've used so far. I have had one crack with a few new units in the form of the Witch Cult. So I took a big unit of witches. I took a succubus to go with them. I took, it was 15 in total, with three Hydra Gauntlets. And I put them all in a Tantalus. And alongside that Tantalus, I had one of the Dark Elder Reapers. So Tantalus and the Reaper are both from Forge World. And I have both models, so I thought I'd give them both a whirl. I also ran that alongside some Harlequins, and I won't talk too much about them because they're another episode. But what was interesting for me is those 15 Witches, an Agonizer on the Hecatrix, and then three Hydra Gauntlets with the Succubus actually did okay. They bounced. I had a really bad set of rolls on the first charge, and then lost a third, more than a third of the squad in retaliation. But they actually did pick up the pace later in the game, and I was pleasantly surprised. Again, particularly around turn three, you know, I'm getting one attack base. I gave them the plus one attack combat drug, and I gave the succubus the plus one strength combat drug, and I got them the wrong way around. I really should have been running the attack combat drug on the succubus, because she doesn't need the strength with her archaic glaive. She's wounding on threes anyway, and the witches should have been the strength one to actually put more wounds down. But, you know, you live and learn. They get two attacks. They get one base, and they get one for their blade. Their basic close combat weapon gives them plus one attack, much like a chainsword. The witches are nothing to particularly write home about. The Hydra Gauntlets are definitely my go-to witch weapon. The reroll to wound is huge. And then once you throw that on with the minus one AP as well, and they're still getting the bonus attack on top of that for having a pair of Hydra Gauntlets as part of their rule, They're pretty good. Like, I was throwing out nine attacks because I had the plus one attack combat drug at the time. I was hitting on twos with a reroll ones, thanks to the succubus in turn three. And then was wounding on fives with a reroll, and actually managed eight out of nine wounds on a single round of combat, and killed two Terminators in one round of combat, which was pretty cool, just with, you know, the three Hydra Gauntlets. I'm still tossing up whether Blood Brides might actually be worth the 4-point upgrade, and the best comparison I can make is against Harlequins, in that the Harlequin unit has a 4 attacks base built in. A Hecatrix, a Bloodbride unit, starts with 2, gets 1 for the extra blade, and then you can give them the +1 attack if you really want to. If you go down that road, there's still 4 attacks compared to 4 attacks. They're both still hitting on 3s. They're both still strength 3. They're both a 4+ invulnerable saving close combat. The witches stop you from running away, whereas the Harlequins can always run away. But the witches are 2 points cheaper per model than the Harlequins. And of course, the Harlequins, you're going to be taking a lot of their special close combat weapons, which obviously makes them a lot more effective. And the same argument can be made the other way, is that the Hecatrix and the Bloodbrides can obviously take multiple special weapons as well, and both units really want a few models just to catch Overwatch fire and the odd wound that they'll take on the way in. So I'm still tossing that up. Bloodbrides might actually be a really viable unit this time, which is nice to see. I wish you could take more witch weapons in a Bloodbride unit, because you're still limited like you are with witches, but I think there's definitely an opportunity there. On the Tantalus and the Reaper, I've seen a lot of people raving about this online. To be honest, you basically get the best of both worlds, whether you want the Dark Lance or the Disintegrator Ravager, for about the same points. You lose a lot of the consistency of the Disintegrator Ravager, and the fact that the weapon is heavy means that obviously you're only hitting on 4s if you move with the Reaper. Is it a good vehicle? Yeah, I don't think it's better or worse than the Ravager. I think in game terms, particularly the loss of range, if you do go that multi-shot mode where you want to shoot it at lots of inventory, I think there's a loss there because you are putting yourself in harm's way to fire it. But I also think that the flexibility of having that one vehicle perform both roles might actually be worth that. So it needs to be seen more on the table. I might have to run a pair of them and see what happens. On the front for the Tantalus, however, the Tantalus is absolutely amazing. It's toughness 7, 18 wounds, 3+ armor, 5+ invulnerable. It does mortal wounds like a Land Raider when it's within a certain distance of the enemy when it charges. It's got a good volume of attacks at a great strength in combat as well. It's the main guns are amazing. 12 shots with strength 8 at BS 3+. It's a really solid vehicle. Its output certainly competes with the Disintegrator Ravagers while still carrying what essentially is 2 Raiders worth of infantry. So I've got one of them sat here. It's never been painted. I bought it back in 5th edition, and now it's definitely a unit that I want to put some paint on and try out again and again and again, which is great, because the whole benefit of this reset means that you can try out units that you might have discounted in the past. So yeah, the Dark Eldar have ended up in this cool position where they feel much more like they used to, particularly around that sort of 4th and 5th edition, certainly. They far more resemble that fast, hard-hitting, super lightweight army, because even though the vehicles are more durable, the infantry still die in droves, and even the vehicles don't survive that long. They survive longer in context, but they're far from, you know, Land Raider, Predator, or Imperial Knight survivability. But that's kind of my thoughts on the few games I've had with them. I think I've played 3 with Dark Eldar now, maybe 4 in varying states and whatnot. I'm currently building a bunch of new stuff, but we'll take a quick break and I'll cover off on a few of the new things that I'm going to try out in the coming weeks, and talk about where some of the notable changes, and also address the bluebird in the room of the Razorwing Flock Swarm. So, where does this all leave the new Dark Eldar in 8th edition? Well, I actually think the majority of Dark Eldar units really benefited from the changes to 8th edition. The 3 stock HQs, the Homunculus, the Archon, and the Succubus, are all reasonably priced. None of them are amazing, none of them are, you know, game-changing, but they provide nice little buffs to the army, each in their own different way depending on which theme you go. I really want to try a Homunculus, particularly with that Crucible of Malediction against a Demon Army or a Tyranid Army or something that's quite psychic heavy, and see how that goes. But all three of them are viable, and not one of them is the auto select, which is great. Of the named characters, you've still got Urien Rakarth, who is a pretty decent pick. Lilith Hesperax, who again sadly falls to the fact that she costs the same price as two Succubus, and two Succubus are probably going to be better than her. And you've also got Drahazar, who has come down a lot in points. I really wish they'd stuck to the Phoenix Lord stat line, because he is actually a little bit behind the eight ball in regards to the rest of the Phoenix Lords. But he's, again, a reasonable selection, but I can't help but feel he's probably overshadowed due to his cost even today, despite essentially dropping by, I think it was 60 points or something. So, HQ-wise, Archon, Succubus, Homoculi, it's kind of pick your poison at that stage. You can really go any of the ways you feel like. The Elite section has seen the Court of the Archon separated out, with basically all of them becoming characters, and obviously getting to select them if you've got an Archon in the army, and they can turn, you know, they can tank damage for him as well. The standout for me is the Slith. You're paying 40-ish points for a unit that has a good volume of wounds, a good toughness, it's got an invulnerable save, it's got decent combat ability, it's got decent shooting output, and running three or four of them is one that I really want to try. They're also a great way of filling out a Vanguard detachment for putting Ivrain or the Vizark or those sorts of Inari characters, because they don't have Power from Pain, so they can't lose it. So running three of them plus Ivrain in a Vanguard for Inari allows you then to slot her into a Dark Elder army, and then obviously she's got a rule that lets her embark in other transports. Or you can just buy them a Venom and put all of them in a Venom in the Inari detachment. There's a few opportunities that those Court of the Archon models do provide you, which is nice. Blood Brides, like I said earlier, are probably going to be a viable selection. Trueborn are basically the same unit they've always been, a little bit more expensive, and I definitely think there's a place for them, particularly with the multiple special and heavy weapons now being all able to be fired on the move. You know, loading up a Raider with two squads of five with a pair of Dark Lancers and a few Blasters in each could be a lot of fun. Mandrakes and Incubi, two of the units that have suffered quite badly in recent editions, are now back with a vengeance. Incubi kill stuff real good, is the best way I could describe them in combat. And they're quite durable as well, which is nice. Mandrakes have probably seen the biggest boost in the Codex. You've got a built-in vulnerable save. You've got a shooting attack that deals mortal wounds on sixes. You've got a decent combat ability. You've got the ability to deploy anywhere on the table. I actually really want to put some on the table and try them out. I also think there's an argument for mounting them in a vehicle and using a Raider's open top drawer to let them fire out of it to keep them alive that little bit longer. So, yeah, Mandrakes is one that I really want to try out. And I never thought I'd say that, so that's really good. Grotesques have seen a little bit of harm come to them. They're a little, well, they didn't get tougher to kill, I suppose, is the best way to describe them. And saw a little bit of their output drop off. I suspect that that'll get corrected a little bit once we see the standalone codex rather than just the index. Troop choices wise, we've still got Rax, we've still got Carbolite Warriors, and we've still got Witches. They've all kind of stayed what you would expect them to be, in that you've got the light assault unit, the durable assault unit, and the light shooter unit. Again, the gap between them is going to depend on playstyle, but I actually think that with the changes to the game and the fact you're getting saving throws now, Carbolite Warriors are probably still the standout for me. But again, time will tell, particularly with transports involved. The Witches and the Rax actually getting to combat and seeing the ability to fight might actually be a significant buff for them. Moving into fast attack, Hellions on paper look better. I'm building a unit of them at the moment. The two damage on their weapons is an interesting thing, and obviously giving them that plus one attack combat drug to a unit of 20 of them means they're putting out a boatload of attacks. They're probably getting reroll charges by the time they're in combat. They're potentially hitting on twos if it's turn three. You know, you're throwing out a lot of strength four attacks that are doing two damage each. The downside, of course, being toughness 3 and a 5 plus save, so they're not going to hang around too long once you start shooting at them. So they might require some finesse to play, but I definitely want to try my unit out. Scourges have gotten better and worse at the same time. Their weapons have changed enough that there's probably a few people out there kicking themselves for putting Haywire Blasters on them. Sadly, the Haywire Blaster now is, in my opinion, probably the worst weapon they can put on them, alongside the Shredder. I think the majority of units you'll see will either be Dark Lancers, Blasters, or Heat Lancers. I'm going to go Heat Lancers on one unit and Dark Lancers on the other. I think the Heat Lancers are going to be there for when you desperately want to get in range of a mid-sized tank and you want that D6 reroll. The neg 5 armor saves kind of gravy at that point. It's good for killing Terminators and those sorts of units. the Dark Lancers, yep, they're taking minus one if they move, and they obviously take that the turn they Deep Strike in, but it does let you deploy multiple Dark Lancers into a ruin in your opponent's deployment zone turn one. They're getting plus one cover save at that stage. So I think there's something to be said for multiple Dark Lancers on a mobile platform that is reliably hitting now, even if it is only on 4+. The Beastmaster is now an elite choice, which I've just realized, and we're in fast attack, but that's okay. The Beastmaster is vital if you're going to be running Beasts, because if he's within six, he's giving them rerolls, and they're using his leadership, which is really important. Only three wounds, which is a little bit sad. I think I'll probably end up using the plus two combat drug, the plus two leadership combat drug for him, just so that he keeps the Beasts in line a little bit better. And I've seen people advocating for making him your Warlord and then selecting the plus one leadership for the Warlord trait as well to give them leadership 10. I don't really know that that's necessarily worth it. At leadership 9, if you're losing enough that leadership 9 comes into play, leadership 10 is probably not going to help them either. But he's, for his price, he's mobile, he provides good buffs for the Beasts, and if you're going to take Beasts, then yeah, you should have at least one of them in the army. I think the Beasts deserve a conversation all of their own, so I'm going to skip them and do them last. The last fast attack choice, though, are the Reavers. Sadly, the Reavers are basically overpriced. They're still pretty good. You've had their role change to a, you know, a sort of an assassin-y CQC unit. Still two special weapons, still two combat specialties, plus the cheaper close combat weapons on the Arena Champion. The problem is that six of them loaded out the way I wanted would be well over 200 points. And even with toughness 5, thanks to the combat drug and two wounds each, I think they're still overpriced for what they achieve. I'm going to run six with a pair of Heat Lancers. I don't know whether I'm going to go Grav Talons or Cluster Caltrops. I think there's arguments for both. The Grav Talons only work when you get into combat. The Caltrops work when you leave or when the opponent leaves, so I think there's an argument for them. And with the increased toughness and extra wounds, I actually think that six of them to kill those light support characters like Commissars or Tech Marines or those sorts of things, I think six of them as an assassin that can potentially charge turn two or even turn one, depending on your opponent, is something that can't be overlooked. But I'd like them to be, I don't know, 5 points cheaper a model would be my gut feeling at the moment. We'll see what happens with some playtesting. Moving into heavy support, the Ravager is the Ravager. I don't think any Dark Elder army worth its salt isn't going to be turning up with at least one or maybe two of them. Whether it's Disintegrators or Dark Lancers, well, we've kind of covered that a little bit at the start of the episode. I don't know yet. My gut feeling is that Disintegrators might be the go-to now, but they're also 30 more points per vehicle because they're so expensive compared to the Dark Lance on a Ravager. So we'll kind of play that one by ear at the moment and see what happens. The Kronos and the Talos, to be honest, I've never really used them prior to 8th edition, so I don't really want to comment too much. I want to say that they're a little bit easier to kill because their toughness has gone down, but obviously with the Homunculi nearby, they're getting a buff back to where they should be. They've come down in points as well a little bit, so I don't know. I think a monster army from Dark Elder might be possible, but I'm not going to comment too much because I haven't really had any extensive time with them pre-now or certainly not in 8th edition. I think the last thing to cover is the planes, unless I've forgotten a unit. I'm sure it feels like I have, but we'll press on. I've already kind of covered the Razor Wing, whether, again, Dark Lancers or Disintegrators, I think is going to be up to personal cost, personal points and personal taste. The Void Raven Bomber is one I'm really keen to try out. I think giving it missiles is just a given. I also think that the Dark Scythes is going to be the way to go in terms of weapons for it compared to the Lancers, primarily because of the argument for Disintegrators over Dark Lancers. It's a similar sort of conversation. The missiles are really good. The Shatterfield missiles are probably going to be your go-to missile for it. The implosions might be something that you use from time to time, but I just think the ability to put those Shatterfield missiles downrange is probably your go-to. And the Void Mine is going to be situational, but really good when you get to use it. The Raider and the Venom we've kind of covered as dedicated transports. My gut feeling is that you're going to see plenty of Venoms again. The Raiders probably less so, partly because of their durability and part compared to a Venom in particular, and partly because by the time you give them a Disintegrator, you're now staring down the barrel of, you know, closer to 120 points of vehicle, and you have to start questioning whether that 120 points of vehicle for something that is actually not that hard to kill, it's certainly better than it was, but it's still not that hard to kill, could be better spent elsewhere when your scourges for multiple lances or multiple blasters are only a few points more, or a triple Dark Lance Ravager for that matter. Command point wise, I've been running mine with 6 in a battalion, just a straight battalion for the time being. And I think that 6 to 8 is probably where you're going to want to be with most Dark Elder armies. The more lances you run, you'll find yourself burning them in the shooting phase to get those rerolls for ones when you start rolling ones for damage. You can't use them to reroll a shadow field, so you're kind of freed up in that regard to focus on dealing damage. The interrupting combat is another big one, the 2 command point one, particularly when you're running a heavy assault army with witches and incubi and mandrakes. You can potentially get yourself in a position where you want to have that up your sleeve when you get charged and countercharged. But I think the rerolls is going to be primarily where it's at. So overall, I think the Dark Elder army's pulled up pretty well in this edition. Now, we'll very quickly cover the proverbial elephant in the room in the form of the Dark Elder Beast Packs. The Beast Packs have seen a fairly significant change in this edition, and they did going from 5th to 7th as well. So the Beasts are now just fast attack choices. The Beast stat lines have come down by and large, and now you buy them without a Beastmaster just as a fast attack choice. If you have Beastmasters, you can take them as slotless. For each Beastmaster you take one unit. But looking at the Beasts, unfortunately, there is a very clear choice to make. The Clawed Fiends aren't terrible, but they're certainly my third choice when it comes to the Beast Packs. The option to take multiples of them as a single unit is cute, but I don't think they do enough for what they are. I think you're probably better off spending those points on Grotesques rather than as a Clawed Fiend, particularly since the Grotesques have a few other options in terms of maneuverability with a Raider and being buffed by Homoculus. Number 2 is the Chimera. The Chimeras come in pairs, up to 12 in a unit. I've used them a couple of times now, and I've been pleasantly surprised. They are Strength and Toughness 4, they move fast, they've got a good volume of attacks, they've got an invulnerable save. They're a really interesting beast unit. If they had 2 wounds, they'd be great. At 1 wound, they're pretty good. I don't mind using my unit of 10 of them. Particularly with a Beastmaster behind them to give them those reroll ones and the leadership buff, they're pretty good as a bubble wrap unit, and they're not too expensive for what they do. They're essentially 10 points a model. But the big winner for this version of the Dark Eldar is the Razorwing Flock. And I'm not going to talk too much about this, because if you've been on the internet in the last week, you've probably seen the list touted around, and you've seen it at one of the big GTs in the UK. The Razorwing Flock is a 7-point model that sports fairly middling stats apart from a couple. You're only dealing with weapon skill 5+. They move relatively fast. I think it's 12 from memory. They're only Strength and Toughness 2. They have a 7+ armor save, but they have 4 wounds each, and they have 8 attacks each. And even though they're only hitting on 5s and at Strength 2, they're probably wounding on 5s or 6s most of the time. The fact is that 8 attacks each is pretty horrific for a unit that can go up to 12 models. So you're dealing with 100 attacks out of those 12 models, which is pretty mammoth. And then you realize that they only cost 7 points a model. And so you're putting down 48 wounds of birds across 12 models with nearly 100 attacks that literally cost you 84 points. And that is mind-boggling, particularly once you start buffing them with a Beastmaster to negate their poor leadership and to give them those reroll ones. And when you can put down a unit that costs less than 90 points, that even though it essentially has no save and is wounded by 2+ against just about every gun in the game, save for las guns and lighter, but we're still wounding them on 3s, I'll point out, the fact remains that to put down 48 wounds on a unit, wounding on 2s, you're still going to put out what is essentially, 80 or 90 bolter shots to do that reliably. And when you think about that for a second, to kill what is less than a 90-point unit that it will be charging you turn 2 and locking you up turn 2, that's pretty scary. And we've seen armies take that to the extreme and run over 140, close on 150 in the UK GTs, and pretty much nothing else. A handful of buff characters like the Incarn to give them that 6+ feel no pain style roll, and other sort of buffing type effects on the beasts to help negate their leadership with the Incarn. Yeah, the biggest deterrent, thankfully, is money, in that Games Workshop here in Australia at least charge $28 per base. So running a unit of 12, you're up for $400. until you realize there are plenty of third-party manufacturers that you can access for $30 or $40 for what will be 5, 10, or 15 bases worth of these birds. And all of a sudden, putting down 100 of them, you know, yes, it's going to cost you a couple hundred Australian dollars, but it's actually pretty viable to do. And for the points that you pay for them and the ability to charge in and tie up stuff so that the rest of your army can get where it needs to be and get the job done, running 2 units of 10 or 3 units of 10 actually seems like a pretty viable tactic. I don't really know the best way to fix that other than just bumping the points on them. I think 7 points is way too cheap for what they are. I'm expecting a 1 to be added to that and ending up at 17 points a model. But realistically, they need to be at least 12, 13, 14 points a model. And that'll obviously cut down on the spam of them. But at the moment, when you can run 100 plus of these things for... Well, if you run 100 of them, you're only paying 700 points. That's just nuts. That is genuinely crazy to think about. They're on 40 mil bases with a unit currency of 2 inches. They can flood the table. They can cause your flyers to crash or, you know, a whole bunch of other issues with flyers. And because they do have fly themselves, bubble wrapping with flyers isn't an option either because they can just charge you. So I think the time in the sun for the Razorwing flock is limited. I do suspect that, particularly after the results of that GT in the UK, we will see Games Workshop FAQing their points value to kind of bring them back into line where they need to be. Or maybe giving the swarm keyword some sort of rule that doesn't let them take objectives, or maybe takes 2 damage minimum all the time from weapons that auto-hit, or, you know, some sort of debuff so that when they do encounter something that should be doing heaps more damage to them, they actually take it. Because at the moment, shooting them with multiple flamers is really the only efficient way of thinning the numbers. And even then, because they're 4 wounds a base, you shoot them with 10 flamers and you go, okay, I'm going to get 40 auto hits. I'm going to end up with 30 wounds. You've done 30 wounds, but they're 4 wounds a base. You've only killed 5 or 6, maybe 7. And seven of them is only 49 points. And then they charge you. And they don't care about Overwatch, because as long as one of them makes it to you, they've achieved the result they need to achieve. So, yeah, it's definitely a unit that I think needs addressing in some way, shape, or form in the short term. What that result is obviously going to be up to Games Workshop. My personal suggestion is just to give them a points increase in the short term and see what that does. But the Horde-style army is definitely one that is going to play very well in the initial phases of 8th edition, and this allows the Dark Elder to do just that. So I've got a handful of Razorwing flocks myself. I'll probably try and run a unit of 12 and see what they do on the table. And then I might even end up with a second unit, but to be perfectly honest, I think it almost cheapens victories a little bit when you're deploying them en masse like that. If you're going to a super competitive tournament, I can see the argument totally for doing it. And I can also see the argument for building to counter it. How you're going to do that, I'm not entirely sure yet, but I'm sure there's people out there already trying to come up with solutions for it. But I do think for my daily gaming, my club gaming, and even most tournaments I go to, I think I'll only ever field 1 or maybe 2 units of them. I can't see myself going down that road of 100 plus. I just, on top of that, you'll outlay to purchase that many of them, even going one of the cheaper routes where you might be paying 30 or 40 Australian dollars for a dozen or more of them. To do it en masse, you're still paying $400 or $500 for an army that has a limited shelf life. Anyone who doesn't think Games Workshop won't address that, I think, is kidding themselves. So rather than wasting money now for the odd win at a tournament for the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, depending on how quick that FAQ comes out, I think I'd rather just save the cash and build a more rounded army. I suppose we'll leave the conversation there with the Dark Eldar. And if you've got any questions or you want to pose anything to me, by all means, shoot us an email. But we'll take a quick break and we'll wrap the episode up. So that's going to wrap up our episode on the Dark Eldar. If you want more detailed information on 8th edition for the Dark Eldar in particular, you can visit the Dark City forums. You can also check out Splinter Mind, the Dark Elder podcast. I've done a couple of guest episodes there with the boys, and they've always got great information for Dark Elder in particular. The future looks bright, in interesting irony, for the Dark Elder in 8th edition right now. The rules really do help them a significant amount. They're a little bit more points efficient, and you're going to be able to bring out units that you traditionally wouldn't have seen 6 months ago. So I think now is a great time for you to get involved with the Dark Eldar and try them out on the table and see if they are your cup of tea. And if they are, then you've got an opportunity there to bring a whole new army to life on the table. For me, it's kind of allowed me to go back through my bits box from 5th edition and put some units together that I never really thought I'd use. So I built 2 units of Scourges. I've got the first 10 Hellions assembled. I've got 10 more to go. I've got 6 Reavers assembled that are almost ready to get painted. I've got 3 Slith. I've got a new Succubus. My Tantalus and Reaper are going to get some paint. I've got a bunch of old Witches that'll see some paint as well. And all of a sudden, there's 1,500, 1,600 points straight away. And once you throw in Mandrakes and a couple of extra characters that I've got, I'm basically going to do a new 2,000-point army essentially from scratch without spending a dime right now, although obviously I've spent it back in 2010 through 2012. So I think if you do want to get involved with Dark Eldar, Gangs of Kamora, the box game, is a great way to get Hellions and Reavers. I think they're probably two of the less efficient and harder to use units, so you probably don't need to start there. But certainly the start collecting box set of Dark Eldar with the Carbolite Warriors and the Raider and the Archon is a great place to go. If you can get your hands on the Witch Cult box set that was from a little while ago, there's still a few of them lurking around in local gaming stores. They're also another really good one because it does give you a bunch of witches and things. But in reality, that start collecting box is really good, and it's a really good place to start. And most of the Dark Elder range is still reasonably priced. I was certainly amazed to see that, at least here in Australia, a lot of the prices haven't gone up in the preceding 5 years for Dark Elder. And whether that's just a fact that they're not selling as well as other ranges, I don't know. But it's been great that when I looked at it, I went, oh, I need one more Slith, or I need one more box of X. I'm not paying $70 or $80 for the box. I might be paying $40 or $50. So, if you feel like checking out the Drakari, I think is how you meant to say it, or Drakari, I'm not 100% sure on the pronunciation just yet. Drakari sounds nicer, I think. Although it does sound like Drukari. I've seen that used a couple of times online as well. It's definitely worth going and checking out and maybe asking around your gaming group and seeing if you can borrow an army and have a crack with them. If you're in Perth, you're more than welcome to get in touch and play a game with me against my Dark Elder and see how they go. But we'll leave it there, guys. I hope you enjoyed this focus on the Dark Elder, and we'll see you again in the next episode soon. Cheers. We are the masters of the shadowed sky. Not for us grubbing, crawling through the mud and the filth of battle. Leave that to the lesser races. We shall only set foot upon the soil these vermin call home in order to place our bladed heels on their throats. You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.